So tonight we're continuing with David H., and I think this is his seventh week.
Yeah.
Seven. All right.
Thanks. Thank you. Hey, everybody. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
Again, it's such a privilege to present in this room to you guys. The room I got sober in a long time ago. And tonight we're on We Agnostics. And before I get to that, though, I read something great, and I'm as I told you, I'm a really slow reader, and this is hard to read. And hopefully some of you guys have read this. This is a book by a guy named Victor Kitchen. He was in the Oxford Group. And the name of his book is called I Was a Pagan. Which when somebody kept telling me I have to read it, but that title, I Was a Pagan, you know, I thought it had to do with Roman times or something like that. I'm just going to read the first paragraph, because as we talk about we agnostics, you know, I know for myself, I came in here as a taker, you know, I didn't realize it, but I had a misconception of what life was all about. I thought I was pretty well-rounded. I thought that all my ambitions were healthy. And I chased them for a long time in here, you know. And I never found the what I was looking for. I didn't even know what I was looking for. But today I think what we're looking for is peace in sobriety. So this book, and it's funny because I have a printout here. You can go online and just type out "I was a pagan" and you can print it out. But to get a used copy of this book is like $175. A lousy copy, yeah. And it's like $500 for a. And as people get more, it's funny, as the big book becomes more important to us in these last few years, all these other books are going up in price. You could probably get it 5 years ago for $5, but now it's hard to get these books. But anyway, he says, at 20, life looked like a high adventure, intriguing and indecorous. I don't know if I'm getting that word right. At 30, it looked like high adventure, socially and economically. By 40, however, I grew highly dubious. Life seemed to have lost its flavor on both counts. It was then that I met the Oxford Group. At this time, I think I would have described myself as white, married, and a Christian. Actually, I was somewhat tarnished and discolored, married in name only, and very much a pagan. A pagan is someone who spends his time chasing false gods. And I found that interesting. He said, I had spent my 40 years chasing pleasure, possessions, power, position, and applause. And I think I was doing that. And this brings us back to the clapping thing. But anyway. So I found that. And then the rest is a lot of, it's hard to read, but it's really a good, there's a lot of good stuff in here. You know, there's one thing I read, and this has nothing to do with anything, and there's not that many young guys in here, but the one thing this guy points out is, if you come in here, you know, and I'm big on men with the men, women with the women, if you come in here and you meet a girl or a boy, and or you have a girlfriend out there or something, or you're here and you're... Because if you go through this process and you change, but you are now with a girl who you met when you had your old beliefs, you know, the way he describes it, you know, married to someone. And, you know, and I found it interesting. He explains it a lot better than I do, you know, and because we all... you know, it's a big issue with Michael, a friend who passed away, the women issue. And I just, you know, we ask you to spend a year alone and so you can get to know yourself. But the other thing is, if you get hooked up, if you engage or whatever, and you actually change, you are stuck with someone who is, who probably won't change, because we can't change others. We think we can, of course, but we can't. And then to get out of this, it's going to cost you half your stuff, as some of us know. So if the rest of it didn't get to you, think about half your stuff. Okay, so anyway, we are on We Agnostics. And the one thing, so you know my thing, when I read the big book, Again, I like us to look at it as it was just published. There's no such thing as AA. And as I always try to point out, when it says we, it's the first 100 people. So, you know, the chapter isn't to the agnostic or some agnostics. It says we agnostics. So it kind of makes me believe that everybody, the first 100 people, all experience some level of agnosticism, which is not not an out-and-out disbelief in God, but it's having a hard time in turning our life over to God or understanding that God is can do anything for us if we allow Him to. And that was my thing. I was all for you. I told you I was Presbyterian. This is my place here. And, I was happy to believe in God, but I didn't get a big message here. I did in this room. I didn't upstairs. And I think that's a whole nother discussion. But when I got here, I was all on board with the God thing. I was trying to be as cooperative as I could be with you guys. But inside, I really didn't understand how God was going to fix my drinking problem. You know, I won't argue with you, but I really, I'll try my hardest, but I really couldn't see how God was going to be so important in overcoming this terrible, terrible problem. And so when we work with others, and that's, I believe, we read the big book and try to learn so we can have a spiritual awakening, but more importantly, we learn so that we can share it with other people. And when you try to, this is a hard chapter to read because, well, for me it is, and that's probably my shortcoming, but because I want when I'm done, I want the guy to believe. I want an undeniable God in this person's life, because it's been such a comfort for me when I finally, it took me 10 years, and I don't want it to take anybody else 10 years to realize that God is everything. Everything, you know. And when God is everything, life is so much easier, you know. I wish, again, I could give you a shot. You could feel it for an hour if you're questioning this. And then you would work for it. You really would work. You would pay total attention to God in your life. And we've had, I'm glad to see my friend Krishna here tonight. And obviously Michael passed away. And these guys were doing so great, so great. And I was like, what happened? And you can't answer that question. But for a split second, these guys, they turn their back on the grace of God, thinking it would be okay, and it wasn't at that time, and we all do it. We all do it, and we get what we get, And so, the grace of God is unlimited, It gets better and better, So I hope that helps. So it starts out here. In the preceding chapters, we have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience can conquer, which only a spiritual experience can conquer. And, I've said it before, and it's funny, I talked to a girl who just started a big book study of her own. There's a big book study in Summit, which gets a little controversial, it's well-meaning, but the leader is a little rough around the edges. And so this girl, because she tried to get a lot of people to go, and people resist because of that, she started her own, out in Dunellen. And, what's the definition of the spiritual experience? To me, it's such, when you've had a spiritual experience, it's so wonderful. It's so wonderful. You want everybody to have it, no matter what. And people you don't know, people you don't like, people you don't, well, I guess you're probably supposed to like everybody if you've had it, but in any case, I've said you see it when people have it, you see it, they get a little excitable for a while, but then they settle in. And, you know, I said to this girl, I said, yeah, it's just another sign of a spiritual experience. You know you were having trouble, so you are starting your own meeting that hopefully people will be more receptive to the great message that they're trying to deliver. They're just hammering it maybe a little too hard. But which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. And this is a great line, to be doomed to an alcoholic death, which is what we're doomed to without this, or to live on a spiritual basis, are not always easy alternatives to face. And in 1939, you were doomed to there was not Passages Malibu, there was not Vivitrol, there was not Suboxone, there was not all the stuff we have today. It was an alcoholic death eventually. Or we're asking you if please help us to create a spiritual experience for you. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. And so, again, if you're reading this by yourself, you're encouraged. And for some of us, I think a lot of us, but some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope. We were not true alcoholics, but after a while we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. And, you know, a lot of us, I know I came in for a long time and I've heard it best described, this is not original. I came to meetings, I made a lot of friends, I was a good AA, you know, and I felt better. But I look back on that time and it was more of a relief-based sobriety. Things were better. I had relief to some extent from alcoholism. But over a period of time, I blew my life up at 10 years sober, you know, and because I was not living on spiritual basis. I was living on the basis that Victor Kitchen talked about. And I told myself I believed I was okay, and that's what alcoholism is. Alcoholism doesn't allow us to see, and I'm talking about alcoholism, not alcohol. Alcoholism does not allow us to see how sick we are. Its whole goal is to trick us, you know, and it wins, you know, it really wins unless we really engage in this. Perhaps it's going to be this way with you, but cheer up, some of us. Okay, your experience shows you need not be disconcerted. So, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power was not there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, was not sufficient. They failed utterly. The question I have to ask is, am I... You know, the question I ask, and I ask guys who I talk to, you know, every decision, every action we take, is this my will or is this God's will? You know, what would God do? What would God do? What would God do? You know, in every action we take today. And over time, you know, one thing, and it gets here, the way to start with God, to start with any relationship, is with a discussion, you know, is just talk to the person. And my sponsor, you know, he started out with me when we were going through the steps. I want you to start just with, in the morning, God, please keep me sober. Every morning, God, please keep me sober. And at night, God, thank you for keeping me sober. And it built from there, you know, it built from there. But that's how how I was told to start. And there's better ways, but that was better than nothing. I'll tell you that. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater and other than ourselves, greater than ourselves. But obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? And the one thing is, we're asking you to find your God. You know, that was good for me. My sponsor said, find your God, not any other God. You know, not anybody else's God. Find your God and have a relationship with your God. You know, so we obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? That's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem, which will solve all your problems, I believe. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. And they're going to talk about prejudice, which I refer to as prejudgment. But I had a problem when I first came to AA. I felt sorry for the people who talked about God. Not sorry, but I thought they were not the people I was attracted to. I guess it's the politest way at first to. When the pain became enough, they were the only people I was attracted to. But when I first got here, I was resistant. We're going to talk about God here. Difficulty rises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problem and explain our fellowship, but his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man and I think most of us thought we had neatly evaded to some extent or entirely ignored. And you know, if you come in here with a firm belief in God, you are so far ahead of the game. That wasn't me, though. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice, which prejudgment, you know, and I think that helped me. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. And that's a big one. That's really the main problem I see. And that's why, you know, this is a subject you have to really work on, practice, you know, almost rehearse. If you can bring God to somebody, it's the greatest gift you can, in my opinion, you can give them. You know, if you can bring an undeniable, trusting, dependable, God in their life, an undeniable God in their life, that's the greatest gift I think we can give anybody. You know, we have a soul sickness. You take away our drugs and alcohol, you better fill it with something. And if you can fill it with God, in my opinion, problem solved. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, and that's kind of was my thing, and cowardly. Not that extreme, but kind of what I was thinking. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. That's a question we look. There's man's will and there's God's will. These are all man's will. You know, they're arguing over God, but it's their decision to go to war, to cut people's heads off, to do the things that mankind has done that make us say, if there was a God, this wouldn't happen. And I believe that that's not true. There's some things there's God and two words, God and faith. You know. These things I can explain as man's will, when there's some things I can't explain, and I say we just have to have faith that it, you know, we have to have faith, you know, because there are horrific things where no one's responsible. You wonder why. You just have to have faith. God has a reason. We looked askance at many individuals who claim to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet, in other moments, we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who made all of this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. So, you know, we're going to talk about the spiritual awakening and the spiritual experience. And I think we have a ton of spiritual experiences. I had one going to Alina Lodge yesterday. There's that one part when you're coming off the Route 80 and you're winding down that road, and all of a sudden you come over a rise and you can see the whole valley, you know, and I was like, wow, you know. And when we go see the ocean, or we go and see the ocean, or Christmas morning when your kids is a spiritual experience, you know. You know, and you can have the white light flash, and that's another one. But, you know, we have these, you know, the starlit night. It is a form of a spiritual experience, but it is fleeting. We need something that is everlasting. We of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudgment and express our express even a willingness. And so it says we found. So we are the first 100 people that as soon as we are able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we the first 100 people, to get results. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define and comprehend that power, which is God. And one thing that was helpful to me is, and you hear all sorts of sermons and songs, and you know, where we're trying to find God and understand God, and I think that's impossible. But what helped me a lot was just be grateful that God knows you. You know that God knows you. You know your God knows you, and that. That's all that counts. He knows you and will always take care of you. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. And I'm not going to point out various religions, but that's a problem. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make an approach and to effect a contact with Him. And again, if you're reading this book by yourself, this is a tough deal, but they're doing a great job of trying to say, you know, we know how you feel, this is how we feel, but once we did this, you know, the effect was immediate and so on. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms for those who seek Him. To us, 100 people, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek Him. It is open, we believe, to all men. And that is a great effort to drive home the point that the grace of God is here. You know, the grace of God is everywhere, but it is in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing is, it's infinite. It is infinite. You know, our life of using drugs and alcohol, I mean, cocaine's the perfect example, but even alcohol, I mean, your first line of cocaine was your best line of cocaine, you know? And we chased that for the next 20 or 30 years, trying to recreate that. And it got worse and worse and worse. And when you start with God, in the beginning, it is flimsy. It is awkward. It is a little hard to commit to. But as, you know, for me, I had a true... I had an experience where God became undeniable to me at about 10 years in recovery. And that's the thing. I don't want it to take 10 years. That's why I get a little kooky about this. I don't want it to take 10 years for anybody else. Once you get that first light bulb go off, where you can say, oh, you know, you'll start to pay attention. And that's what they're trying to do here. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions you will find in this book. Do not let any prejudgment you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself, what do they mean to you? At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth. And again, you have to start somewhere. You just have to start. And to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood Him. And I know that's good, but after a while I get annoyed with as we understood Him. You know, I just would rather say our relation with God, but we're trying to soften it to pull you in. After we found ourselves accepting many things, which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. So we had to begin somewhere. And that was where my sponsor, and he was insistent on the thing, God, please keep me sober. Please keep me sober today. And thank you for keeping me sober. But then he would also, a lot of times when I'd call him, he always say, and by the way, how's your God today? How's your God today? He would always say. And that was awkward at first, but then, you know. And actually, now that I like it now that he, unfortunately, that he passed away. I appreciate what he did. It annoyed me for 20 years, but, and that's why, you know, that's, you know, I take so much for granted, and I just don't want anybody else to. I think we all do it. It might just be me. But I took AA for granted. I took my sponsor for granted. I took God for granted, and that's not as much the case anymore. So here it is. We need to ask ourselves but one short question: do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? And that's a question we ask when we work with people. And we dig a little bit, and it says, as soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And now we always go back to the definition of the spiritual awakening, which... the spiritual experience, I'm sorry, which in my book is page 567. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I am going to read the first paragraph, I think. I'm going to read a little bit of it. It says, you know, because everyone, and it says in here, it says the terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. And again, we're recovering from alcoholism. Drinking is about 10% of our problem. Our behaviors, our beliefs, our motives, what drives us, our character defects, that is what we are trying to overcome. We're trying to overcome alcoholism. Once I had stopped drinking and the noise had stopped, and I had attained relief-based sobriety, I thought I was okay. And that thinking got me 11 90-day coins and 11 90-day pins, 2 1-year coins, and we just don't want that for anybody else. Us who have made this a lot harder than it needs to be. I'm going to go to the end here. It says, most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance and belligerent denial. And I don't run into that a lot. We find that no one need to have difficulty with the spirituality of this program. This is a tall order, though. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials. That's probably why I fell short for a long time. Open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable. And it says, there is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. And that applies to this and a lot of other things that that we resist in AA sometimes. Back to page 47, it says, that was the great news for us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we all say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes. That's not quite what I said, but that is true. I wish I was that. I was more judgmental. But I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. And again, that my sponsor was very good about that. And I think that's important. I wanted all for everyone right now. And that's not going to work, but I wish it would. Besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudgment. Many of us have been so touchy that even the casual reference of spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism, and I don't run into that much, but I'm sure it happens. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. And that's, we've talked about this. In AA, we answer to two people, to two things. We answer to God, and we answer to drugs and alcohol. And if you don't do God's will, alcohol says, I will kill you. You know, God says you must do my will, and alcohol says, if you don't do God's will, I will kill you. And we had, sadly, an example of that recently. That there's no president of AA, there's no board members of AA, it's alcohol and God. And we ask you to find your God and just have just undying faith and gratitude for him, and your life will change. Many of us, okay, I read that. That thing had to be, though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with, I like this, alcoholic destruction, we soon became open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was the great persuader, right? If we don't go to God, alcohol will pay the price. It finally beat us into a sense of reasonableness. It finally beat us into a state of desperation. Of there's a lot of words you could put there. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be as stupid as us for as long as we were. And that's really, they use the word prejudiced. There's a lot of other words we could put in there, too. The reader may still be asking why he should believe in a power greater than himself. We think there are good reasons. Let us look at some of them. This part drives me a little crazy. And based on my track record of time, I'm gonna jump ahead a little here. So I'm going to go to the next page. It says, instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists chose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Rather vain of us, wasn't it? So it says here, we who have traveled this dubious path, again, beg you, we're not asking you, we're on our knees, begging you to lay aside prejudgment, even against organized religion. And this is important, and this was tough for me, as you can see, it still is a little bit. We have learned that whatever human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea about what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices when we might have observed that spiritually minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness we should have sought ourselves. So when you work with guys, and sometimes the church they have gone to has made them very cynical, and they really have a hard time refusing, they resist the God thing. And like I said, they're always going like this. They're very polite about it. They're going like this when you're talking to them, but you know inside they're going like this, you know. Or they're not really going like this on the inside. And that used to kill me. And I used to be really upset with some of the various religions because I felt they had chased away, they had damaged us, you know. And that's not true. And it's right. It's been here in the book for 80 years. I just never saw it, you know. I had prejudgment, you know, and or prejudice. And yes, the church has, has brought practices. This is important. Where is it? Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting the practices and observe spiritually minded persons of all races, creeds, demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness, which we should have sought ourselves. And I talked about that, and my buddy Maddie, he's here, who somehow brings out the best God of all people, believe it or not. When I sit with him, you know, we were talking about something he was doing, and he was doing behaving like Victor Kitchen talks about, chasing things, thinking if I do these things, I will find and catch happiness, you know. And I said, that's not my experience, you know. We go through the steps, we change, we help others, we go from being takers to givers, we have a God in our life which is undeniable. And in that, we find peace. All we're here to do is find peace. And when we find peace, we will be happy. You can't find happy. You can't get happy. You can't catch happy. You have to attain peace through the 12 steps in a relationship with God. When you find that peace where the things don't bother you anymore, in that peace, I promise you will be happy. Not perfect, but you will be happy. I hope that makes sense. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes used their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. And there's examples of some of the preachers on TV, Tammy Faye Baker and those people. Well, we used to talk of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of the trees. And, you know, our disease tells us things that are not real that make us drink, right? The suddenly moments. Our disease, our prejudice against religion tells us things that are not true to keep us from saying, I'll give you everything to God. I'll give everything to God. If we don't want to give everything to God, we have to have a reason. And we come up with reasons to not commit, and no, they're not real. They're not true. We never gave the spiritual life a fair hearing. In our personal stories, you will find a wide variation in each way, in the way each teller approaches and conceives of the power which is greater than himself. And that's as we read the stories. You know, when you speak at AA, and some of my guys, some of the young guys that I get to talk to, and they're enthusiastic, and all they're doing is they're out there speaking. They're speaking. I'm speaking here. I'm speaking there. I'm speaking here. I'm speaking. What are you saying? You know, what are you talking about when you're out there? You know, what's the story? You know, and you go to speak. We have one here at 7 o'clock on Friday nights, and it's you book them through whatever you book them through, and a lot of it is they come in and they tell you what it was like, 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 and what it was like, you know. And they try to get the laughs, and it's funny, and it's great for the newcomer. But, you know, it's supposed to be what it was like, what happened, you know. I drank, I had a great talk with Tom the other day. He's got a great story, but the story is this happened, and now, you know, our story should be what it was like. I drank a lot like the rest of you. Something terrible happened, but now I'm in AA, and I have my family back, and my kids love me, and you know, I, whatever it may be, it's, you got to give a message of hope, you know, of this is what you're going to get if you come in here and do what we do. You know, it's got to be a message of hope when we speak. And actually, I went to watch this guy speak, and he did do a pretty good job. So, but I was nervous, I'll tell you that. Power greater than self. Whether we agree with a particular approach or conception seems to make a little difference. Experience has taught us, the first 100 people, that these matters about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. They are a question for each person to settle for himself. And that's, you find your God. Find them, trust them, you know, surrender to them, but, you know, find your God. On one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access, so every one of the 100 has gained access and believes in a power greater than themselves. They found their God. This power has, in each case, accomplished the miraculous. The humanly impossible. And, you know, it's funny. I sponsored at 10 years. Guys would ask me for whatever reason to sponsor them. And I didn't have this. And I sponsored by encouragement, you know. Just don't drink. Do a 90 and 90. Call me before you want to drink. I was not delivering God. And, God, you know, those poor guys, you know, some of them are actually still around. But, you know, I want you to believe in God. That's all I want. The miraculous. As a celebrated American statesman, let's look at the record. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declared that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power, I would say a certain attitudes, but... and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. You know, we see you. Hopefully, you'll see everything differently. Your priorities will be the opposite of what they were, for the most part. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and a sense of direction flowed into them. What else could you ask for? This happened as soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Once in confused, a baffled lot by the seeming futility of existence, they showed that the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life, leaving aside, this is great, leaving aside the drink question, they tell you why life was so unsatisfactory. And if you come into AA and you maybe have, again, the relief-based sobriety without this, life will be unsatisfactory. You may accept it because I was afraid to go through the steps fearlessly. So I told myself I was okay for a long time, but that was not the case. They show how change came over them. When many hundreds of people were able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact in their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have their God in their life. This world of ours has made more material progress. I'm going to jump ahead here. The one thing I'll say is when it says, even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to, here they're trying to give us examples of our old thinking and how wrong it was. And when we believed that man could not fly and Professor Langley's flying machine went right in, you see videos of that thing went down the ramp and the wings collapsed and he was supposed to be a genius. And then two bicycle repairmen at Kitty Hawk, the Wright brothers, they finally got something off the ground. And when they called from Kitty Hawk to the, I don't know if it was the New York Times, but said, hey, the Wright brothers have flown. They have flown, The guy on the other end said, there's no fucking way I'm printing that, man. He goes, I'll lose my job. Man cannot fly. I will not print that, And it was true. But, if I told you, came in and said, I just got back from the moon, you would not print that either. Let's see. We had on page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems with the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble. Okay, so here's a big question: the bedevilments. You have this in sobriety. If you don't do this. I had these problems and I didn't understand. I got 3 years and I was having trouble with personal relationships. I could not control my emotional natures. I was prey to misery, depression. I couldn't make a living and we had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear and I was unhappy. I couldn't be of real help to other people. I had a lot of opinions, but I couldn't be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether or not we should see newsreels of lunar flights? So, the best thing I've heard is if you do these steps, there's promises attached to each step, of what you will get. But there are also promises of what you will get if you don't do the steps, and these are them. We will have trouble with, if you don't do the steps, you will have trouble with personal relationships. You will not control your emotional nature. You will be prey to misery and depression, and that these are the kind of the anti-promises, and it's important to point these out. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance on a spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting that power. Our ideas did not work, but you can see it in people. The God idea does work. The Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which would fly was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve all our problems. And even a little self-sufficiency is a problem, even when you start to get the God thing. When others showed us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who insisted the Wright brothers could not fly. Logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still liked it. It was not by chance we were given the power to reason and examine the evidence that our senses and draw a conclusion. That is one of man's magnificent attributes. We agnostically inclined would feel satisfied with a proposal which did not lend itself to a reasonable approach and interpretation. Hence, we were at pains to tell why we think present faith is reasonable and why we think the sane and logical to believe than not to believe. Why we say our formal thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, we don't know. Let's just see where we are here. All right, so... Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason toward the desired shore of faith. The outlines and the promise of a new land had brought luster to tired eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands reached out in welcome. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. And this is turning everything over to God. God is everything or God is nothing. And when we talk about turning everything over to God, I don't think we ever truly do that, but doing it to the best of our ability is scary. We hang on to our work life and our sex life and our certain things from time to time, unfortunately. But the more we can totally step ashore, the better we are. That was natural. But let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? For did not we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our own ability to think? What was that but sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful, objectively faithful, to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all along. We found, too, that we had been, and this is what Victor Kitchen talks about, we had been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that had brought us. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves, and then with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset or a sea or a flower? Okay, down further. Imagine life without faith. Were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life. But we believed in life, of course we did. Go a little further down. It's already 7:30. Top of page 55. Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world. People who rose above their problems. They said God had made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but we liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves. For deep down, this is true. Where do you look for God? Deep down inside every man and woman and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it was there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves, and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are fact as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much of a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it was only there that he may be found, and it was so with us, the first 100 people. We can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudgment, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. And that is the greatest gift you can get. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. In this book, you will read the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His story is so interesting, it should be told now. His change of heart was dramatic and convincing. Our friend was a minister's son, and was a minister's son. He attended church school where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religion, and you get that with people who went to Catholic school. After the years, he was dogged by trouble, frustration, business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities in his immediate family embittered and depressed him. Post-war delusionment and more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. One night, when confined to a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose when he bitterly cried out, "If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in the room, he asked himself this question: "Is it possible that all religious people I have known are wrong?" While pondering the answer, he felt as though he had lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came and crowded out all else. And this is like a mental obsession. Who are you to say there is no God? This man recounts he tumbled out of his bed to his knees and in a few seconds was overwhelmed by the conviction of the presence of God. It poured over and through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide at flood. And boy, I wish that my wonderful reading could do this for you guys. I know it can't. I wish it could. The barriers he had built up through the years had been swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power, and infinite love. He had stepped from the bridge to shore, totally to the shore, for the first time. He lived in the conscious companionship with his Creator. Thus was our friend's cornerstone fixed in place. No later vicissitude has shaken it. His alcoholic problem was taken away, and hopefully all his other problems. That very night, years ago, it disappeared. Save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink has never returned, and at such times, a great revulsion has risen up in him. Seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. God has restored him to his sanity in terms of his relationship with alcohol. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe, and that's what made him willing to believe. He humbly offered himself to his Maker, then he knew. It seems like an incomplete sentence, but it's not. Even so has God restored us all to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us might grow into it more slowly, but he comes to all who have honestly sought him. When we draw near to him, he disclosed himself to us. And that is it. Thank you.
Great.